One less Starbucks coffee a week. That's boom.
Oh, you jerk. Don't make people do that.
Bienvenidos a The Fish Nerd. Bienvenidos a los Fish Nerds. Es una celebración de pescados. Pescar y comer pescado. Eso es lo que siempre interesa. Siempre será divertido y lo más importante es todo es verdad. Yo soy Juan Carlos Giraldo de Podcast and Business y estoy aquí con todos los nerds.
I'm Clay.
And I'm fish guy Josh, and I collect fish like baseball cards.
Interesting way. Do they come with bubblegum?
No bubblegum.
That's too bad. Because do you ever, you know, do you really collect baseball cards?
I used to when I was younger.
Yeah, I always did garbage pail kits.
I did do garbage pail briefly, but growing up in the Bible Belt of the South, they weren't really looked upon by some of my parental figures.
Yeah, and I'm a lot older than you are too, probably. So I was more in the mid-80s when I was into them. So
yeah, I was. I guess I was just a little too. I was still under the thumb of my parents, so that I couldn't just freely collect them.
Yeah, that's how it always goes. but you know, I want to start off today because today's theme, the name of tonight's show is "Fish Are Nature's Vegetables." Did you know fish are considered vegetables in some circles?
I mean, I don't know how accurate it is, but yes.
And I've heard this my whole adult life. I know I have a lot of friends who are vegetarians, and you ask them, so you're vegetarian? And by the way, I agree with every vegetarian who says that's the healthiest way to eat. They are probably correct. But then they always say, or a lot of them say, I'm a vegetarian, but I eat fish, or I eat chicken. Or I eat some kind of other meat product, and they don't consider that kind of meat. Now, so the question we're going to answer tonight is fish meat, or is fish a vegetable? And the reason I brought this up is because someone shared an article with me that said, decrease cancer risk of vegetarians who eat fish. And I think that title should be decreased vegetarian numbers in vegetarians who eat fish.
I totally agree with that sort of, you constantly run into, what is it called? Is it pescatarian? Is that a vegetarian that eats fish?
That's the going term. And before I get to your answer, we actually put this out to the Fisher Nation. And I asked the question, and I asked people to call into the Fish Nerds hotline to tell us what they thought about fish as a vegetable. So I'm going to play for you a couple of bits of phone calls we got from, actually, they're from a lot of Fish Nerds correspondents, believe it or not.
Awesome.
Yeah, we kind of cheated by, I told them all to call in, if we're being completely honest. The first call here is from Doc Martin, our fisheries true pescatarian friend here.
Hey, Clay. So this is Doc Martin calling, and the question of the day appears to be, are fish vegetables, which is a very important question. But first, I thought, what is a vegetable? Because a lot of people think, you know, tomatoes are the fruits and vegetables, and I think most people know by now that a tomato is technically a fruit because of how it grows and where the flesh and...
I should probably stop for a second and tell you that Doc Martin is probably smarter than both of us combined, just as we get going here. So she's already way overthinking this whole thing. Well, let's hear her out.
These are located in how those came about from plant part. So, the article that she posted was well written and informative, which I really appreciate. They didn't tend to do anything outrageous or anything like that, but from a scientist's perspective, I thought we would have a little game. is it a fruit or a vegetable? So, this is fun for me also to look up. First, we can talk about what is a fruit the actual botanical definition. It'd be interesting to get Hugo's perspective on this because...
You know, it's really fun, too, because I've known Doc Martin a few years, even before she was a college professor, but she's sounding more and more professory as she gets cooking along here.
A botanical fruit or vegetable doesn't always necessarily agree with the culinary use of a fruit or vegetable. And the tomato is a great example. So, botanically speaking, a fruit is a seed-bearing structure that develops from the ovary of a flowering plant. Okay? Whereas vegetables, botanically speaking, are all other plant parts, like roots, leaves, and stems. Okay, that's all fine and good. So, we already established that tomato, while culinarily used as a vegetable, botanically is a fruit. What about an eggplant? Also a fruit.
I knew that. I knew that one.
How about beans or peas?
Fruit? No.
Also a fruit.
Yes, fruit.
Corn?
Fruit.
Also a fruit.
Yeah.
You're nailing it, Clay.
Celery? No. Celery is a stem, so that is actually a true vegetable.
Oh, I wasn't sure.
Broccoli?
Flower.
Another true vegetable. It is October, which means it's fall. So what about pumpkins?
Fruit.
Fruit.
Those are a fruit.
Yes.
What about nuts?
She said nuts.
Like acorns and sunflower seeds and things like that.
Must be fruit.
Well, it turns out that it depends. So a seed or a nut is going to be different things based on what the actual outer cover.
Oh, we ran out of Doc Martin. She used up all
and we
time.
Still never
we may never
we still
know
never up the answer of whether or not fish were vegetables.
We will never hear the end of that. I didn't pre-listen to this. This was a simple question, so we know where Doc Martin was going. She was dodging this question, you know. Just we might as well have asked Donald Trump.
That was awesome.
Kind of awesome. So we don't know what
ran
Doc.
Ran out of tape.
Yeah, we ran out of tape. Simple question, and we got Doc Martin. By the way, next week she's co-hosting the show.
That's awesome. I was just going to say I really miss. I haven't heard a good. The Doctor is in for a while. I missed hearing the good Doctor on the Fish Nerd airwaves.
Well, next week we'll get a full hour of her. So we've just set that up. So then we got a phone call from Captain Sean Tibbetts. And Captain Sean is the shark captain from MaineTunaFishing.com. The grumpiest guy I know.
Hello, Fish Nerd Nation. Captain Sean Tibbetts here. My diet consists of Twizzlers, more Twizzlers, and more Twizzlers and the occasional Chef Boyardee during the fishing season. But in the winter, we tend to kill our own meat, primarily through hunting. And we eat a lot of fish that are organic from the Gulf of Maine, but we catch over the summer. And I'm a firm believer in organic, free range. It makes a whole lot healthier than anything raised in a farm and keeps us a lot healthier than we would be if we were buying stuff at the grocery store. Well, you know I suck at fish. You're welcome.
All right. So he also didn't answer the question.
So, 2 for 2.
2 for 2. And let's see. We got one more, I think, here. Yeah, we got Rich Collins. Rich Collins is our newest correspondent. He's actually our fly fishing correspondent.
Yeah.
He has not submitted any pieces yet, but it's coming. He's actually kind of local to me here. He vacations in my neighborhood. It's neat to live where people vacation, and he will be teaching me to fly fish over the course of the next year. Probably start with tying flies this winter, and then in the summer, actually catching fish on a fly. So
can't wait.
I can't wait either. By the way, he went to guide school with me, but never took the guide test. He just went to guide school. So here's his take on it. By the way, so far, we do not have an answer to this question.
Not a one.
Yeah, at least not from the experts, which are supposed to be the Fish Nerds correspondents. Completely useless people.
Hey, Fish Nerds, this is Rich Collins. I gave this a lot of thought, and I do not believe that fish are vegetables.
Yay!
The following reasons. They do not bite. They do not spray with their own milk. They do not have eggs. And they do not kill other vegetables for food. So I think that pretty much sums it up. Fish are not vegetables.
Okay. So leave it to Rich to tell us the truth about fish and vegetables. And, you know, I thought for sure Doc Martin would have laid it out for us.
What I really want to know about Doc's call, you'll have to ask her next week, is when she left the message, did it, like, beep? Or did she keep talking and not realize that it stopped recording?
I like to think she just went on and on and on. But I will pose this question back to her next week. So, Josh, you're kind of a fish expert.
A little bit.
What is your background?
My background is in aquaculture and fisheries biology, fisheries research. So I focus on a lot of fish in captivity, but also I do quite a bit of field work, especially with my current job.
Okay, so we could consider you as someone who knows more than the average person about fish.
I like to think so, yeah.
Certainly know more than I do. I would give you that. So, and I know a lot about vegetables. I do grow vegetables in my garden.
I eat vegetables.
You eat. Now, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Doc Martin and the rest of the Fish Nerds correspondence crew there. Are fish vegetables?
No, they are not vegetables.
Finally. You know, that's, if everyone had called and just said no, we would have credibility. But the fact that our own correspondents can't answer the question quickly. That's really good. Now, just to get back to this article, and it's actually not a terrible article. And it says, this is by Dr. Mercola. And this is on the website, mercola.com, of course.
Take control of your health since 1997.
There it is. It's colorectal cancer. Is the third most diagnosed cancer and the third leading cause of cancer-related deaths. I had a friend, a 43-year-old friend who died just a few months ago from colon cancer.
Mm.
My neighbor.
I had an uncle that passed away not too long ago.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Similar symptoms.
Yeah, and they get diagnosed at stage four sometimes, you know, like it's
exactly that's exactly what happened to my uncle, stage four, by the time I was diagnosed.
Yeah, this woman, and it's because they get diagnosed too late. This woman was a runner and peak of health, and just all of a sudden sick. You know, it's terrible. So, but anyway, so she's talking about the role your diet can play in your risk of this disease. And she says processed meats being among the worst offenders and vegetables being among the most protective. So it's not surprising that a new study published in the JAMA, Internal Medicine, found vegetarians had 22% lower risk for colorectal cancers, 19% lower risk for colon cancer, and 29% lower risk for rectal cancer compared to non-vegetarians. I mean, the whole article is it's kind of in that same zone. My only problem with the whole article is calling fish a vegetable. So-called, she clarifies this, so-called pesco-vegetarians who ate fish at least once a month and other meats less than once a month enjoyed the greatest cancer protection, a 42% reduction compared to non-vegetarians. So it sounds like true vegetarians aren't in the best class to be in, but they're way better than me. Or you, but the pesco veggies are probably the best place to be. So a little bit of fish protein.
I assume, exactly. They're getting a few extra things that their body relies on with that little bit of meat.
Well, it's actually the omega-3s, right? Previous research has shown the omega-3s to be protective against numerous types of cancer. For instance, in one study, the spread of cancer cells was blocked by omega-3 fats, suggesting that a diet rich in omega-3 fats could potentially inhibit cancer in men with early-stage prostate cancer. So I think it's not just the protein, but then if you read further, most people benefit from some amount of animal protein. So I guess it's a combination of omega-3s, pressed proteins, a little bit of fat, and you're good to go. I'll link up this on the website. I'm not going to read the whole thing to everybody. It gets less funny really quick once you start talking about cancer. So
it's amazing how that happens.
It just really bums you out. And, you know, I'm going to use that as a transition. Speaking of bumming me out, it's October. It's National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And this month we've been raising money for the National Breast Cancer Foundation. We did this starting the very first episode this month. And you were on with me, Josh.
Correct.
On this. And I interviewed Captain Sean and Lindsay Withers from MaineTunaFishing.com on top of a mountain. And I played a part of that interview on that first episode of the month. This being almost the last episode of the month, or maybe the last one this month, I'm going to end this with the second half of my interview with Lindsay Withers and encourage you to go to FishNerds.com and click through to the National Breast Cancer Foundation and make a donation and help us reach our goal of $1,000. We're only at about $500 right now.
And you know, I would add to that that, I mean, even if it's something where maybe you've given a cancer through another means, I know in October there's a lot of cancer drives going on. At the very least, some of the prizes that you have set up are just awesome. I mean, why not put forth a few bucks to the Fish Nerds and try your luck at maybe one of these fabulous prizes? I mean, I know I did.
It's a great thing, and I'm going to keep them all myself, I think. But we have, we're giving away pink Fish Nerds hats. We're giving away Dexter knives. We're giving away the Angler's Pint glasses. Have you seen these?
Oh, yeah.
So my friends, Rhett and Karen Talbot, have an art gallery in Maine. Rhett's a science writer, writes for Nat Geo and all kinds of other places. And incidentally, his best friend is Richard Ross, the cephalopod expert. We'll get him on soon. And you know, he's out your way, Rich Ross. And,
oh, okay.
And anyway, so they're giving away a set of four Angler's Pint glasses. These are the hottest thing this year. Back of Orvis magazine right now, the back cover, is featuring these glasses. They're now in Orvis. And they're friends of mine, and they've donated to the cause. We're giving away two guided fishing trips. One with a really great guide out of the Highlands of Maine, Richard Duvant from Twin Maple Outdoors. That's a river guiding trip for smallmouth bass. One of the best guides I've ever seen. And the other one is probably with the worst guide on the planet, me. Worse because I've never actually guided anybody. I have my guide license, but I don't know how to do it yet. So this year I'm giving away a lot of free trips to practice. So you could come on a trip with me if you win it. Plus other prizes. We have knives and fishing line and pink fishing swag and all kinds of cool stuff. Over $1,000 of prizes. Go to fishnerds.com, click through on the pink stuff until you get to the National Breast Cancer Foundation's website. Make a donation in any amount. If you donate $20 or more, James Frank, is it James Frank? No, not James Frank. Michael Frank, the amazing James's brother, who's a fishing guide in South Carolina, will give you a pink fly that he tied himself.
Yeah, I saw those. They
so
look
you're
nice.
Guaranteed to get something if you donate $20. But if you donate anything, I don't care how much it is, I'm going to enter you into the raffles. So $10, you're in on it. It doesn't matter. So get that done. And here's the second half of my Lindsay Withers and Captain Sean interview. And if you listen close, it gets graphic. This is not for
Let's
the faint of heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I fell in love with fishing when I was really young. So it's always been a go-to for me. You've got bees.
Are you allergic?
No, but they freak me out.
Bugs.
Just bugs. I don't do bugs.
Unless you'll burn the house down if there's a spider somewhere.
Okay with the fish, but bugs make
yeah,
you
no,
nuts.
I don't. No spiders. No, no, no. I almost crashed my car the other day. There's one on my windshield. I'm like, ah!
All right, so you grew up fishing.
Yes. So grew up fishing. I've always loved it. Mostly just being outside. Just the peace of being outside was nice. I met Sean on the dock in Saco. And he had me at shark fishing. I was sold. Hook, line, and sinker, done. So shortly after we started dating, I got diagnosed, I think it was 2 months.
Like during a tournament, right?
I found
it. We found out during a tournament.
And then I got my diagnosis during the tournament. Mm-hmm.
It'd be, I'd be weird to find it during a tournament. I would wonder how much fishing you're doing.
Not a lot.
So the first tournament we did was the day after my biopsy. So my initial, you know, my initial biopsy. I wasn't supposed to do anything. And I was furious. I'm like, you guys are ruining my weekend. I have fishing to do. I'm not going to be able to cast. This is ridiculous.
Cancer ruins everything.
Yeah.
It's so inconsiderate.
But luckily enough, a certain someone set the hammock up for me up in the tower, so I had a spot to hide and put ice on my boob. And I was comfortable. We had a really good weekend. Yeah. And then right after the tournament, I got the phone call, and they said, it is what it is. And I said, fucking lovely.
this is just... That's the right reaction.
Yay.
Yeah.
Go team. Yeah, so... That was the start of it, but during the whole thing, like waiting for follow-ups and pre-ops and more testing and visiting this doctor and going to the radiation oncologist and the medical oncologist and the surgeon and then the plastic surgeon, it was a lot of doctors. But in between all those appointments, fishing was more of a...
We fished the Casco Bay Classic, too.
Yeah, we did.
Right after you did.
Fishing turned into being... into more of a medication than anything.
Like a therapy?
Yeah, I just drowned myself in fishing. Like, it was... Because it was the only point where I was so focused on something else that I didn't even think about what else was going on.
Yeah, incidentally, Sean, you're a shark guy, right?
Yep.
So, I'm probably wrong, because I'm wrong a lot, but there's only, I think, two vertebrate animals that don't get cancer, and I think sharks are...
What's a vertebrae? Is that edible?
Yeah, animals with backbones, right?
You lost them at science.
So,
science.
Have you heard that? The sharks don't get cancer?
That's interesting.
No? Because I'm just kind of thinking in my head. I'm like, all right, so you've got cancer. So now you got to like take it out on the sharks. Like, you bet.
I kind of did. So.
Yeah. yeah, she did.
So, when we were getting ready to book my surgeries, like to schedule the dates and stuff, we had already bought into the Casco Bay Classic, which is a shark tournament. It's 3 days, and I was going with Sean and my friends from work, and I was ready for this tournament. I was so excited, and they wanted the surgery to be in the middle of the tournament, and I was like, oh, no. No.
You reschedule.
No. Completely changed that date. So I made them push it back a week.
See, I've been more impressed if you said, all right, fine, come on the boat.
Yeah. Use my Dexter knives. Yeah. Just cut that thing out. No, so we did the tournament and caught my first shark. My first one was a 9-foot blue, which was absolutely surreal. I'm like, holy crap, this is a shark. And it has teeth.
Yeah, they're not. They're blue sharks.
Sean
are huge,
made me
right?
touch it. But, yeah, so we fished the tournament. Had my surgeries done at Brigham on August 28th, 2013, if you want to get specific. I had a full mastectomy on the left side and reconstruction. And then later on, I had another surgery to kind of balance things out. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with the results now.
Good, good.
Yeah. Yeah, good. My plastic surgeon built a good set. He did a good job.
Excellent, excellent. I can't imagine. I can't imagine having to go through something like that. We've lost friends in the past year to cancer, other kinds of cancers, and I'm super glad.
Terrible beast.
And because you're so young, you wouldn't have gotten checked through regular screenings at any point until, you know, what, 20 years from now.
I had no idea.
So you would have not noticed it until maybe you were at stage 3 or 4 and it would have been too right. late to do a lot of the work that you got done. So
mine was pretty rapid moving. Mm-hmm. When they first caught it, they thought it was just a ductal carcinoma, which means that it's inside the duct system, so in the pipes, if you will. However,
I'll tell you one thing I know about cancer patients is their vocabulary is ginormous.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that means make bigger. It gets
Clay, just jump. I'll drop off all the stuff to your wife.
Yeah, so it started out as what they thought would be a ductal carcinoma, and then after my mastectomy, they staged it between a 2 and a 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it had expanded out of my duct system and into the breast tissue. When they did my mastectomy and took the breast tissue out, you know, they check the margins, right? So they're going to check the outside of the breast tissue I know, I'm holding my hands like I have a pumpkin in my hands, just in case you view
it. But
I
was not imagining a pumpkin.
No. No.
Yeah. No. Or maybe a boob. So, if you, like, look at it as, like, a ball, they check the edges to make sure that there's no cancer cells on the outside. And that was the way that they would know if it got into my chest wall or not. It was in my lymph nodes. It only got a couple of them, but they ended up pulling them all out from underneath my arm.
Mm-hmm.
I know this probably isn't radio okay, but
well, I kind of
refer to it like anal beads. Like, they just popped them out in a string.
Anal beads. Like,
yeah, that's, now I know everything I need to know.
That's yeah. not going to get it. Yeah. Hopefully that now, doesn't make it.
Now I know why you guys are together.
But yeah, so I had a little bit of lymph node involvement, so they ended up checking all those. But they did a good job with the surgery. Everything was clear.
Good. And prognosis now?
I'm on tamoxifen for 7 more years. They gave me a 10-year stint doing time. It's an estrogen blocker, which initially sucked.
Well, anything hormonal
it
is
was
so hard
to deal brutal.
With. Mm. You okay?
Mm. Every once in a while it gets a little rough, but yeah. It's not terrible anymore, thank God. It kind of balanced out.
I don't have to do so many 5-day offshore trips anymore.
Like, ah. You're a dick.
But it suits you. So now that's mostly behind you.
Yeah.
It's going to be part of who you are for a long time.
Yep.
You're doing great stuff, raising awareness and money, part of all these great companies. What's your fishing career looking like? Is that a thing? Or do I just say, like,
well,
say fishing career?
I guess it's a thing.
I mean, you get paid to fish?
I don't get paid to fish.
So it's not a career. You have another career. Your other
yes,
life.
I'm a paramedic yep. down in Worcester, Mass.
It's an interesting thing because a lot of people look at people who fish and do what you do or what I do, and they think that's our jobs.
And, yeah, well, I wish it was my job.
Yeah. It could be. You never know.
You pretty much have to be independently wealthy for that to be your
yeah.
quote-unquote job.
Yeah, I'm learning that.
Well, and it's a tough professional industry up here anyway because we don't have the tournament structure that they would have, like, down south.
Mm-hmm. Is that where the big money is for...
Well, from the charter side, from my business side, it's a 2-month season. You have 2 months. I get $250,000 in overhead. I have 2 months to pay all the bills and put a paycheck in my pocket. You know, you stretch the season out a month and a half one way, a month and a half the other. But you basically have, from the time the kids get out of school to the time the kids go back to school, to make all your money. Your tournaments are all in August.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go down to the south and they fish year-round.
Right.
You know, their dead season is in Florida. Their dead season, I would assume, is probably like July and August because you can't go outside without
dying.
Dying.
Do you ever think about, like, packing up and heading south for the winter?
I would assume it won't be much longer. I know.
Josh, have you been listening to the podcast the last few weeks?
Definitely.
All right. So every Thursday, I've been doing something different. I've been throwing up classic Fish Nerds episodes.
Back the throwbacks.
Throwback Thursdays, right? Dave and I have only ever kept 15 episodes at a time available on the internet. So if you were new to the show, you couldn't go back and back catalog and listen to all 125 episodes. So what I've been doing is every Thursday since I took the show over is I've been releasing an old episode. So now we're getting 2 episodes a week. Monday I'm releasing one. And Thursday's a classic throwback. We're on week 5 right now. And they're totally fun. They're very different shows. You can kind of see the show evolve
yeah,
over
they
time.
Are.
I think some of our best stuff came early. But we peaked at episode 6.
I loved hearing your, I guess it was episode 1 or 2, your recollection of your first experience with your boat and like putting the trailer in the water. That was really great stuff.
Yeah. And if everyone's subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, you will get these every single week, or Stitcher, or now we're on iHeartRadio. So now we're kind of,
oh, nice.
We're everywhere you get podcasts. So, listen for those Throwback Thursdays. Let us know what you think about them. And you know, compare them to our newer shows and let us know how we can improve, or if we need to go back in time and do things like we used to. Let me know that too. So, but the show is going to be evolving over the next few months, and we're looking for fan input, especially if you know any musicians. We're trying to get all original music on the show. So if you know someone who wants some exposure, we don't have any money, so we can't pay you, but we're looking for new intro, outro music, and new stuff for like the Fish in the News and that sort of thing. And any kind of music that sets that mood will work for us. And we'll, of course, put you in the show notes, link on our website, and I'll mention you on every single show that we use the music on. So send that to clay@fishnerds.com if you want to play, and we'll mix you into the show.
Oh, yeah. I definitely have a few musician friends from back home that I'm hoping will be interested in it. I'm definitely going to send them your
Yeah, and it's you know, the funny thing about this, Josh, is I get a lot of people saying, hey, Clay, you should come and write an article for me for exposure, or you should, I get a lot of writing requests, and they don't want to pay me, and I tell them, I could die from exposure. So I do feel bad that I can't pay musicians for their work yet, but I'm hoping to be selling advertising soon on the show, and when that starts happening and we have income, I do plan on paying people for their music. I think artists are super valuable, and if you can pay them, you should be paying them. And speaking of paying them, this show needs to be paid for. And if you're checking us out regularly, you should be on patreon.com/fishnerds and give us $1 an episode and keep us funded. I'm not going to say more about today because we've done enough of that. But
just get out there and do it.
Help us support. Help us keep the show going. It does cost money.
Buck an episode, no big deal.
$4 a month, you won't even notice it. It's better than Planet Fitness, and you'll be smarter, kind of.
one less Starbucks coffee a week. That's boom.
You jerk. Don't make people do that. All right. Hey, so, Josh, you are so lucky because you get to hang out with Peter Moyle.
Yes. I love hanging out with Dr. Moyle and his crew.
Yeah, now, for those who don't know, why don't you tell us who Peter Moyle is?
So, Dr. Peter Moyle is a really famous fisheries biologist or fish biologist. I like to refer to him sort of as the godfather of California fishes. However, he's known pretty far and wide. I know Dave was pretty excited the first time I brought a piece about Dr. Moyle because he wrote the textbook that Dave used in college. So he's essentially just, he's one of the greats as far as biologists go. And fortunately for me, he's only about an hour and 15 minutes up the road.
So, and a real icon in the pescatarian world.
total icon.
Yeah. And by the way, I am fish stupid. All my fishy learning has been done in the field and one fish at a time. I didn't go to college to study fishes or anything like that. And I had never heard of Peter Moyle, but I get excited about people like this because smarter people than me get excited about it. And I always want to hang out with smart people. So,
I like to tell people that when they don't know about Peter Moyle and they go, so you're hanging out with this guy, Dr. Moyle, like friends of mine that aren't really in my field, but want to know what I do. And I said, well, let me put it to you this way. Dr. Peter Moyle works at the Moyle Lab. So, he's a big deal.
Yeah, he is a super big deal. And you got to work with him.
Yes.
So tell us about this.
So this is a little different than the last piece, the F and West piece that James and I submitted, where they go out on monthly surveys to some of our local Delta and marsh waterways and do fish surveys. That last piece was me riding along with those guys, and I do that here and there when I want to go collect certain fish with them. But this one's a little different. This is actually an annual field trip that they do for their fish biology class. So this is our chance to get college kids, some of their first experience out in the field, learning how to sample, how to operate, electrofishing boats, seine nets, looking at the basic biology of a fish in a field, in the field versus, looking at pictures. So this was kind of a unique opportunity where I get to be sort of at ground zero of everybody coming in from the sampling and bringing fish back to the table. So I can sort of pick and choose what I want for my aquarium collection. But over the last few years, it's really turned into a thing where I'm sort of one of the crew members in the fish workup station, because I bring all the aquariums for the fish to be held in throughout the day. So it's one of those things where, you know, I'm just in awe that I'm working with Dr. Moyle and his fantastic crew. Yet he's the one that's coming up to me going, "Hey, thanks so much for bringing the truck with the fish tanks on it. And it's so helpful." And I'm just like, no. It's, trust me, it's no big deal. It's an honor for me to be out here. But essentially we got to collect fish all day out of Pewta Creek, which is a creek that runs along UC Davis, the school where the Peter Moyle Lab is. And it was a fantastic day.
What now? So for those of us who don't live in California, is that a saltwater creek, freshwater creek? What's the water like?
This is a freshwater creek. It's sort of... it's just a little west of Sacramento. So this is further inland from the San Francisco Bay Area where James and I reside, where you find a lot more salt water. This is a little further up the way, still into the freshwater reach.
So, and I'm really interested to see what kind of fish you're sampling. What have you been catching?
So there's quite a mix of fish there. I want to say that over the years, they've really worked with adjusting flows in the creek at optimal native spawning time, so that they've seen a really big jump in native versus non-native over the years. But the main things we got were Sacramento suckers, which are a local native sucker, just like, you know, the hognose and red horse back east. Sacramento pike minnow was another great one we found, which is, even though it's a minnow, prior to largemouth bass, another predator fish being introduced, this was sort of the big bully on the block before we brought over all our other eastern fish.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people hear minnow and they just assume it means tiny bait fish, right? And
yeah.
And it's not always the case with minnows. Minnows is not a size measurement. It's not a measurement of fish. It's
not at all. It's such fishes. It's such a large group of fish. And I mean, even things like carp are minnows.
Yep.
And it's California, the area doesn't have a ton of native diversity versus say like Tennessee or Kentucky or, you know, Missouri. But, they have a really unique makeup of native fish here, in that a lot of them are minnows, and they've all sort of evolved to hold these different aspects of the food web, where you have the pike minnow who evolved to be the predator on other minnows, yet you have the California roach, which has evolved to be the small stream minnow, and then you have Sacramento blackfish, which are actually filter feeders, but they all look very, very similar to the point that some people have a hard time telling some of them apart. So it's always interesting to not only see the Davis crew work these fish up and point out all the differences to the kids, but nowadays, I mean, there were points where I was leading a group of kids and pointing out all the different fish identification keys, which was a really great experience for me.
Let me stop you for a second. I was listening to you very carefully here, and I think I figured out a how you can tell the native fish from the non-natives just by what you were saying.
Did you hear those context clues, Clay?
Apparently, all the native fish in Sacramento are called the Sacramento whatever. Sacramento blackfish, Sacramento...
It's either Sacramento or California. Yeah,
very,
exactly.
Very, very clever. I mean, we would have been really smart to do that. We'd have had our 12 native fishes all named.
Yeah, easily. Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But we did also have a lot of fish that are more familiar to the listeners back east. A lot of largemouth bass, smallmouth, your standard run of like bluegill, red ear sunfish, green sunfish, log perch, which are really cool looking little darter species. It was a fun time. I look forward to that trip every year, not only because I get to grab a lot of fish for the aquarium, but also also because, you know, I feel like they've sort of let me into the fold there at Davis, even though I didn't go there. I don't work there, but they've really accepted me as sort of an honorary crew member. So it's always fun when I can go hang out with Dr. Morrill and the crew.
Yeah, it's really cool. And because you show up and you actually work, you know, you're not just taking space up. You're valuable.
Exactly.
And I think whenever you're doing anything, showing up is one thing. But showing up and working and being part of stuff and getting involved,
yeah,
and getting dirty, it makes you appreciate it more. So, you know, show up and do something. You know, don't just watch. That's really cool. Now, when you say kids, you're talking about college kids.
Yeah, these are college kids.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. And I've done some few things where I've been invited to college classes to talk about fish. And it's really funny for me because I didn't go to college to study fish. I studied psychology. But because I do this fish nerds thing, people, you know, they assume I'm expert at stuff. And and if you fake it, people really believe you. Now, are you faking it or you truly know stuff?
I feel like I'm pretty much past the point of faking it these days.
Yeah,
I think so.
You've got it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, cool. And so are you going to follow up with Peter Moyle again, or is that just a once a year?
We actually, this Saturday, the second half of that class is a field trip to Bodega Bay, which is...
That's where you buy... small, like, grocery items and...
No, but it is a great location for local Dungeness crab, but it is not the same bodega. So, yeah, this is going to be this is the second half of the field trip where the class is going to be learning the saltwater side of things.
Oh, that's fun.
And I believe, aside from just having the aquarium set up, my wife Lauren and I will be doing the cast netting. We're going to show everybody how to throw cast nets.
That it's harder than you think.
Exactly.
Yep. I remember the first time I did it. I it looked so easy, and then it was not. No, how big is the cast net you throw? Oh, we lost you. Okay, Fish Guy Josh. Can you hear me?
Clay.
Hey.
I can hear you.
Good. All right. So have you heard of NaNoWriMo? NaNoWriMo? NaNoWriMo?
I have not.
No. I've heard of it. I've been following it for a few years. In fact, 2011, Dave and I won a book pitching contest where we actually won a New York City agent to sell our book that we were writing together.
Ah.
And I believe the people who put that book pitching contest together created a month called NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writers Month. And the idea, by the way, we never got published. we'll tell that story another time. But the idea of NaNoWriMo, which is a dumb name, but is...
Yeah, rolls right off the tongue.
It's the dumbest thing, right? I'm not a big fan of initialisms anyway. Like, I can deal with things that make words. What do you call it? What do you call it? Like scuba. Acronyms.
Well, now you've jinxed me. Yeah, acronyms.
Acronyms. I can deal with some acronyms because they actually spell a word. But initialisms, NaNoWriMo is not an acronym. It's an initialism. Initialisms don't say words. It's a string of letters that don't make sense. Right.
Just like a noise.
It's a noise, NaNoWriMo. But anyway, November is National Novel Writers Month, and thousands of people around the country are going to try and write a novel in 30 days. And I thought, you know, I've been trying to put a Fish Nerds book out for years. And I thought, let's get together with our, you know, 12 listeners, and let's write a book together. Let's crowdsource a book. So what I'm thinking is, anyone listening to the show or following us on Facebook or Twitter or wherever you happen to be, if everyone could write 300 to like 2,000 words, whatever they want to write, and tell us a story, email it to clay@fishnerds.com. I will, and with some photos even, and I can compile those together. And by the end of the month, we have our first Fish Nerds book that's crowdsourced.
So just like that.
Just like that. I'll do the editing and make it look good and lay it out, and I'll pay for all the work it takes to get it done. But everyone will get one. And it'll be totally
so
cool.
Essentially, we're looking for a collection of short stories of fishy fish nerd adventures, eh?
Yeah, fish nerds adventures. And I like to kind of – I'm a big fan of themes. You know, so I'm looking for, adventure fishing. So I'll tell you the story I'm going to write. I'll give you the
All right.
I'll give you the short little, version.
A little taste of what you'd like to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And this is actually a very, very true story. And it, by the way, this story happened to me probably 15 years ago when I was a science teacher, and it may have evolved over time. But I used to work at a fish ladder in Manchester, New Hampshire, the Amiskeg Fishways.
Yes.
And I think I've told this story on the show before, but I'm going to tell it again briefly. And I had keys to get into the river below the turbines and stuff. And the way the dam was set up, there was a 700-foot dam across the Merrimack River, an island, and then on the other side of the island was where the turbines were. And that's where the fish ladder was. And so I had the gate keys below the fish ladder, and I would frequently fish down there. So my friend Tattoo Dan, happened to be a tattoo artist, used to go fishing below the dam together. We'd canoe across the river from that spot, and we'd tie the canoe off on the island and then rock hop below the dam and fish the pools. Now, those pools below the dam always had largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, salmon, trout, hiding in the pools because the river would drain out and the fish would hang out there. And it was a great place to fish. Really cool. So one spring day, Dan and I were fishing. Actually, it was in the evening. We were fishing there. And the dam has what's called flashboards. Have you heard of flashboards?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have smaller dams just up the stream from my house, and they just pulled the flashboards for the winter.
That's right. And flashboards' job is to raise the lake water. It's a river, but they call it lake water, but the pooling area behind the dam, higher. These were 4-foot-tall flashboards, and they're designed to fail, which means fall down at some point. And it's 700 feet across the whole face of the dam, so it's a pretty big dam. And
it's a big flashboard.
Very big flashboard. They're just big pieces. They're plywood. They're just sheets of plywood, 4x8 sheets of plywood all across the whole dam. So Dan and I are fishing down there, and it's beautiful and sunny, but we don't know up north, 10, 15 miles, there's a huge thunderstorm and tons of water coming down the river. And we're in a weird spot where we're fishing and we're catching tons of fish and having a great time, and we hear that horrible sound that you never want to hear below a dam.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. So we start packing our gear up, but you're supposed to have 3 to 5 minutes to get out of the area when you hear those. We had about 30 seconds, so we managed to pack our gear, pack our pockets, and the flashboard started falling off the dam. And we're in the dead center, so it's 350 feet in either direction to get to shore. And our boat is actually in the center of everything, kind of tied to a small island. Not the same island we came across on, but like in the middle. And so we want to get to the canoe so we can get across the river and get out of the water. And so the water's coming up very fast all around us. Flashboards are kind of rushing past us. And so we grab our fishing rods, and we put them on our teeth, and we jump in the river feet first, and we butt bounce. So, by the way, if you ever go in the rivers, in rapids, you should never. But if you do, always go feet first.
Feet first,
and just bounce on your butt. And we did that all the way down to our canoe. And we got to the canoe. Now there's rapids on either side of us where it was calm when we first got in the river. And we managed to get into the boat, untied from the tree we were tied to, and canoe back across to where my car was parked. And we're soaked and whatever. And we start driving up the hill to the top of the dam, and we see sirens coming across the bridge. And on our property, we're on top of the dam, there's like firemen with binoculars. We look down the river, and there's a Zodiac coming up the river. And across the other side of the river, there's ambulances, and there's a helicopter flying around. So we drive up the hill to the top, and there's a cop standing up there. And I get out of the car and I say, hey, I'm Clay Groves. I work here. And what's going on? And he goes, well, we got a phone call. Someone lives in an apartment building up there said a couple guys were in the river fishing and the dam started flooding them out. And they jumped in the river and they didn't see what happened to them. So we're looking for those guys. I said, man, that's so crazy. I was just down there fishing with my friend and we didn't see anybody. and then we drove away. So that's the short version of that story.
Yeah. That sounds like the water came up so fast.
It doesn't take long when those flashboards give. Yeah. I mean, that's a ton of water. But you know, we could have done it. now I was probably 26 then and 43 now. So
could have died. We didn't. The end.
Yeah, there's a lot of fishing stories that start with I could have died today.
Yeah.
But take your fishing stories, write them down, send them my way. I will beautify them for you. I'll edit them and change some stuff around, and you could be part of this crowdsourced book. And it could be a lot of fun. It may be a national, maybe a annual thing, or maybe we'll do a fishing book on techniques next time, or something completely different. Anyone who submits a story will get a package of Fishner's decals, so you can be part of the Fishner Nation. And of course, you'll get recognition in the book, and you'll get a free copy of the ebook when it comes out. So that's game. So clay@fishnerds.com, or find us on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or wherever you get your Fishnerds news, and join us for Nano Remo.
Or just smooth like butter rolling off the tongue.
Oh, you know, and you can find information on this at nanoremo.org. Hashtag nanoremo. By the way, go ahead.
Just email Clay.
Email me. I'll link you up. And you can find more information at fishnerds.com. By the way, hashtag, my daughter and I had a hashtag talk today. Because she never knew hashtag had other names.
The hashtag talk.
So quick talk for you, Josh, you being a little younger than me. What other things have hashtags been called over the years?
Are you referring to the actual symbol that they put in front?
Yeah.
Gosh, it was called... I always just called it the number.
Number sign for
like
sure.
Like the number sign.
Yeah, we called it that. We call it the pound sign.
Pound sign, yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah, my daughter said, how about tic-tac-toe sign? So I would credit her for that one. And then my very most favorite was the original name. When it was first designed, it actually has a name. Do you know what it was?
No.
It was Octothorpe.
It was like pound sign.
Nope.
What is it?
Octothorpe.
Octothorpe, huh?
Yeah, isn't that cool? So you can always hashtag Octothorpe pound sign. You know, there's a whole list of them you can do there. All right, fish in the news.
Fish in the news.
Fish in the news. All right, and I'm gonna do a couple here. I'm just gonna do two today. And the first one, this is actually comes from a viral video, and I'm going to bring it back to the HuffPost story. Great white shark gets stuck in a cage with divers. Have you seen this video?
Yes, I was looking at this video earlier today.
Yeah, it's insane. So imagine you're in a shark cage. Have you been in a shark cage? You're a diver?
I am a diver. I have been in open ocean aquaculture cages, so it's sort of like a gigantic fish pen, so not necessarily a shark cage, but I have been in the pen with sharks around me on the outside.
It's a little spooky, I can imagine. Now imagine a great white shark ends up in the cage with you. This is what happened. This was off in Mexico. And so the shark cage, what happened is the shark came by and swam by and bit through the oxygen line. And while they were trying to fix that, they opened up the cage a little bit, and the shark went into the cage with the diver. And then eventually the shark escaped and swam away. But the reason I bring this up is this went viral. It was huge. It's all over the internet. It'll be at fishnerds.com. But it's important to know that the people who were doing this video were actually breaking the law. And I think that's important. And I'm not sure if the Huffington Post piece I'm linking here actually says that. But but at this particular place, it's a protected area for great white sharks. It's part of a place where they look out for them. And in that area, it's illegal to chum for sharks in, because there's so many sharks there already.
Yeah.
And you don't need to chum for them. But this company was clearly chumming the sharks up. They had like a big hunk of fish on a rope, and they were dragging it in front of the shark.
I mean, you could tell they were just in the video by like how many small bait fish were in the area.
Yeah, the only way that would happen is if there's chum everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how I feel about chumming the fish in. Part of me gets it, you know, and if the money they earn goes to research and that sort of thing, I kind of get that. But someone could have died because they were breaking this law. I mean, that would have been really, really frightening. But.
Yeah, you know, it's chumming's. It's always interesting. It's even among just fishing. You know, it's all about, I guess, what your end goal is and what sort of rules are put in place to control it. I mean, you know, I've seen some of those spots in the Caribbean where they put the chum sickles to attract the sharks. I've been on dive boats before where the local guy, you know, throws in pieces of fishing bait over the side to get the nurse sharks to come in. And it's, you know, you really have to be careful and know your surroundings and what the habits of other guides and fishermen are before you just start doing stuff like that.
Yeah, you really do. And by the way, I chum when I fish. I have no problem with the act of it. I just have a problem with, like, okay, you're in a protected area. Maybe in that area where you're told not to do it, you should. Maybe you don't do
exactly.
It. You know,
exactly.
I mean, when I fish, if chumming is going to bring fish in, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's not like putting pollution in the water and, you know, crazy things. We used to, mm-hmm. as a kid, we would spray our bait with WD-40. That's probably not great.
But, oh, I remember that old trick. Yeah.
Very popular in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. But anyway, so they were doing it. And by the way, the people who were in the story, says that, "I'm aware this video received many angry comments about shark cage dives and chumming. Many of you think baiting is wrong and it isn't fair to the sharks. But guess what? I agree with you." In her Blue Water Travel Report, Yonkers says she understands the issues with chumming, but believes the benefits observing an increasing understanding of sharks outweighs the negative impacts. That's fancy talk for, man, that's awesome.
Like, yeah.
That's all she's saying there. It's really cool. But in that area, you're not supposed to do it. So they could have saved herself some trouble there. But they got a viral video, and that's,
you know, oh yeah,
that's something.
So, you can really see in that video just the. It looks like there's divers in the lower part of the cage,
yep.
probably scared out of their mind.
Yeah,
obviously. But man, can you see the, like, that really brave soul?
He's pushing
that's
the shark,
like,
out.
Up there trying to get it out.
Yeah.
Man, that guy's got some cojones on him.
He does. But, you know, that shark didn't want to be in the cage. He wasn't in the,
yeah.
She wanted out. I mean, she just. But they could have hurt the shark.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It's an endangered species, you know? So it's important. And I'm a big fan of sharks, but I don't know. I have such mixed feelings about this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because I at the same time, if I was there and they were doing it, I'd been like, "Wow, this is awesome!" You know, I would have been with them. I'd have been guilty. All right, and other fish in the news. This is from New York Times, big time news, man. If the New York
big
Times
time.
Is reporting on fish, it's something. I'm just trying to pull it up right now. All right, in the wild, goldfish turn from pet to pest. And this is actually, this story comes around every so often, but this happens in Australia. Two decades ago, someone dropped a handful of unwanted pet goldfish into a creek in southwestern Australia. Those goldfish grew, swam downstream, mucked up the waters wherever they went, and spawned like mad. Before long, they took over the whole river. So this is a classic story. Do you have goldfish in the wild in California?
Yeah, we deal with them all the time in several of our East Bay Park District waters. We have a lot of goldfish hotspots.
And have you angled for them?
I not specifically. I've yet to hook one. There is a few areas near where I go carp fishing that I know are synonymous with goldfish as well. So I want to specifically go to those areas. areas and maybe try and grab some.
Yeah, it's
most sterile goldfish are everywhere.
Yeah, I've caught one on a hook and line when we were on a quest in New Hampshire to catch all the fish. It was not a very big one, and we ate it. But it's a very, very common for fish owners to like let fish go into the wild. If you look at Florida, they've wrecked their fisheries in their freshwater fisheries with aquarium fish. So I'm not going to read you the whole article. But so let's pretend, Josh, you've got a goldfish and you've decided, you know what? I've had this goldfish for long enough. He's an old fish. I'm going to release him in the and release him, or I don't want him anymore. What do you do with him?
You know, it's so not realizing this was the scenario you were going to give me. This is what the amazing James and I do at schools when we take the mobile fish exhibit out. This is one of the exact scenarios that James presents to the kids.
Perfect.
Where myself, one of the other naturalists, pretend to buy a goldfish or win a goldfish at the fair, and we pick one of the kids from the audience up. And we initially make the wrong decision and go, hey, I'm going to throw it in the water. And we have the two kids shake hands and they become, quote, goldfish married. And we call up a bunch of other kids to be the babies.
Uh-huh.
And the other volunteer that was the single little Sacramento perch native fish suddenly gets pushed out because there's no more space up front by the tank. So it's funny you say that. This is the exact thing we do every week. So we tend to lean more toward encouraging the kids to either get a bigger tank, return it to the pet store, sometimes for credit, or see if maybe you can give it to a friend. If you're a little cold-hearted about it and know how many goldfish there are in the world, like myself, I probably wouldn't be really against throwing it on ice and maybe using it for cut bait later. Yeah, to catch some catfish.
We used to feed them to our snakes. We would feed them to our garter snakes.
That's what I do with feeder goldfish right now. I have a garter snake at the lab. We feed the goldfish.
Oh, that's great. By the way, have you ever given goldfish to a northern water snake?
No.
Oh, we used to keep one of those in a tank, and we would drop. And they're in the garter snake family. They're great snakes. They're one of those snakes that the first time you pick them up will bite you and make you bleed everywhere, and they'll stink on you and poop on you. And then the third time you pick them up, they stop biting and they just become very docile and easy to handle. they're terrific, but they're so fun in an aquarium. And if you put in a dozen feeder goldfish, one 18-inch snake would eat a dozen in 15 seconds. It just blah, blah. I'm exaggerating, but it's so fast. How fast they eat goldfish. It's so cool. So the New York Times has a recommendation on how to get rid of your fish. So if your fish is sick, so they're not even saying if you want to get rid of it. They're saying, okay, say they're not even going to go to just kill it for fun. But if it's sick, they say, don't let it go. You want to kill it humanely. So they put it in an ice slurry, just like you recommended.
Yeah.
And they answer the question, should you flush it down the toilet? What do you think?
Well, I assume it probably isn't recommended, but if it is alive when it goes down there, if it's going to hit the sewer, I don't feel like it has much of a chance survive.
Yeah, now I agree with you on that. And they say don't flush it down the toilet. As for whether you should flush your fish down the toilet, experts recommend against it. There's a slight chance your fish could survive the journey through the septic system. There's not, by the way. Maybe in like the 70s where your toilet's flushed into the river and there's nothing between you and the river or whatever, but like with modern sewage, I think that's impossible.
Yeah. I think that goldfish has a better chance of winning the lottery first. Yeah.
And by the way, to go into a septic system, that's not a chance because that's not open to this. That's, you know, that means you have to go through a leach field somehow and end up. That's impossible. but in general, it's not a very pleasant way to say goodbye to bubbles. I think that's a good ending to it. That's a terrible way to go. The ice slurry, though, that won't kill the fish.
Won't?
No, I don't think it will. Not a goldfish.
I mean, maybe eventually.
Maybe. My friend Ray in high school, he lived in a shed in his backyard. And his shed was only heated, you know, when he was sleeping at night. And he had a 10-gallon aquarium with a goldfish in there named Basil. And we called that fish Basil the Wonderfish. And the reason we called it that is because, first of all, there was no aerator in that tank. So, you know, it was a 10-gallon tank. Ray would throw all his pocket change in the tank every day. So the bottom, the only bedding in the tank was nickels, dimes, quarters, pennies.
So the gravel was loose change?
Gravel was loose change. When the tank evaporated down to about 3 inches of water, Ray would get the garden hose and stick it in the tank and fill it back up again. And every so often, the tank would freeze solid because Ray wasn't home for 2 or 3 days at a time. And it would thaw out, and the fish was fine. So that was Basil the Wonderfish. And so
that is one hardcore goldfish.
Yeah, goldfish are hardcore. I mean, anything in that, and most of the minnow family is like that.
Yeah.
They're survivors. They can deal with that low oxygen water and murky stuff and a bunch of pockets.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's.
I mean, I know down south, I think one of the biggest ways the goldfish get out is. You know, you can buy live goldfish in bait shops, and I think people just dump them, you know, they dump them over the boat at the end of the day.
Oh, I'm sure of it. I mean, I don't know about your state, but New Hampshire, if you're using any kind of bait, live bait at all, letting the bait go is illegal.
Yeah. I think it pretty much is the standard everywhere. It's just not necessarily followed. Out here, we actually have very strict rules. Using live bait, much less dumping it. So there's really only a couple places in the state where you can even do that.
Yeah, it's just not a thing. And New Hampshire, I mean, I always feel terrible too. We go ice fishing and we got like 10 minnows left over, and you just kind of want to dump them down the hole, but you can't. So you dump them right in the ice, and that's
yeah.
It. But luckily, there's lots of little quick animals that come eat them, so it's not completely wasted.
Yeah. Well, you do like me. I put them in Ziplocs.
Yep.
Afterwards, and freeze them, and then I just use that as cut bait later.
Cut bait or chum or whatever, get your sharks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, good.
Exactly.
That's it. All right. So, you know, don't let bubbles go. That's bubbles. Don't let Basil go. All right. So, let's wrap this up. So, that's it. You've listened to a few fish nerds when you should have been fishing.
We'd like to thank our families for supporting us while we podcast, go on fishing quests, and do all sorts of silly things that nerds do. If you'd like to help us crowdfund this podcast, go to patreon.com and give us a buck.
Yeah. Special thanks to Lindsay Withers and Captain Sean Tibbetts from MaineTunaFishing.com. And of course, big thank you to Fish Guy Josh for taking the co-hosting reins tonight. You can find Fish Guy Josh everywhere you find social media at Fish Guy Josh, and especially check out his YouTube channel. It's awesome, and we'll link that up at fishnerds.com.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, until next time, follow the code of the fish nerds, spawn early and often,
avoid free lunches with strings attached,
and swim against the current every chance you get.
Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.